It's Tuesday, October 21st, and you're listening to the Geek News Central podcast, sponsored by GoDaddy.com. Geek News Central is a proud member of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. Hey, everyone, I got a great show for you. Yes, I'm back in Honolulu. Strap in. Here it comes.
This is the Geek News Central podcast, part of the Tech Podcast Network. If it's tech, it's here. So grab a cup of coffee, take a seat, and crank up that volume, because you're listening to Todd on the Geek News Central podcast.
Aloha and welcome to the Geek News Central podcast, coming to you as live as it can be from the beautiful state of Hawaii, from the Geek News Central studio overlooking Greater Oahu. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. And of course, I want to welcome all the new listeners to the podcast. Yes, my name is Todd Cochran, and you can find my website over at geeknewscentral.com. Check out all the great content over there. Got a lot of contributing editors over there that put in a lot of great content. Of course, content that I submit as well. And of course, check out the podcast, archive podcast, via the podcast link on the website. And very, very soon, we're going to start having a lot more media in the special media section. So keep your eyes peeled on that as well. Hey, for all of you, the longtime listeners of the show, hey, welcome back. And of course, thanks for being part of the Ohana. Thanks for being part of the extended family here at Geek News Central. Of course, those of you that are new to the show, we want to make sure that you become part of the Ohana. All you have to do is subscribe to the show and, hey, you know, just hang out and have fun with us. Well, lots of things happening here, folks. Yes, I'm back in Honolulu. Got back on Saturday evening. Had a lot of stuff to do, really. It was just busy, 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 busy. But I do want to back up and just kind of catch you up from what had happened from the last show that I recorded when I was in Texas. I got done with the show Thursday night relatively early. Was basically up on online, instant messaging people, doing some Twittering, taking care, kind of hanging out on the internet. And got to chatting with some people, had some good conversations, and would plan on hooking up with one of the listeners of the show in the Dallas area for dinner on Friday. He had planned on calling me. Never got that call. I don't know what happened. But I did get a message from the owner of Podcast Pickle. And he says, hey, where are you at? He said, I'm close to you. Well, let's just hook up. And he came over on Friday, and we had a few drinks right there at the lounge at the hotel, and just talked shop for a couple of hours. He's doing a video podcast, so had a lot of discussions about what I've been doing with video and going to like shows like Consumer Electronics Show and kind of the process I used there. So it was very, very productive. And then he kind of surprised me. He says, in a couple of weeks, just keep your eyes peeled. We're going to have a big announcement over there at Podcast Pickle. Something big is coming. I'm like, well, what's going on? You guys get bought, or are you, what's happening? Are you making an alliance? And he really couldn't say. He was mum the word. He didn't. He clammed right up, and he couldn't say anything. So I guess we'll have to just keep our eyes peeled and see what happens over there. I'm sure we're going to see probably a big announcement coming from him. So I wish the guys over there good luck and see what happens. But he's got my curiosity piqued, that's for sure. But got home again Saturday afternoon. Had to really kind of get the office set up. Being gone practically for 3 weeks, had to get the cameras put back up on their tripods and get the lights back in the office and get the banners hung, because Sunday at 4 o'clock Pacific time, I had a big announcement to make on the slate of podcasters that make the 2008 slate. And that went off without a hitch. But I do want to back up, not really back up, but I just want to acknowledge my sincere gratitude to the 46 or 47 listeners that listen to this show that spent countless hours doing the reviews. I think Bree said it best. She says, Todd, I spent about 5 hours on each category going through and doing the review. And we have a spreadsheet we sent them, and spreadsheet with all of the nominations in. And it was a lot of work, but that work paid is really paid immense dividends because you know, it really made things easier, not easy for me, but easier. And I really couldn't do it by myself. I couldn't do all those reviews on my own. It wouldn't be fair to do it that way anyway. But and we haven't done that in the past. We haven't, we've always used the listeners of the show to do the reviews. And I'm sure some that have done them probably will never want to do them again, because it is. It's just a huge amount of work. But big testament to all you guys. A big thank you from the bottom of my heart for your hard work and support. It was greatly appreciated. It really, really is. And I'll get around to doing some sort of a formal recognition on the website or something here in the next couple of days. But made the announcement. And, of course, there was a lot of very, very happy people, 220 happy podcast producers, and 1,600 and some that probably were not so happy. I think that, it's a big challenge to be nominated. In some categories, it's easier than others. You know, some categories did not have a huge number of nominations, where other categories were just, just real stiff competition. And as I said yesterday during the live event, a lot of podcasts focused on those top two categories, but yet didn't tell their audiences to nominate them in the lower categories. And this is, basically, if they would have, they would have been right in there in the running, and some of them didn't make it into the other categories. And a lot of podcasters really did not do some of the main things that they should be doing on their websites, and probably missed making the cut by, fractions of points because of simple things that they haven't done on their websites. But the review process is pretty comprehensive. I talked about that yesterday during the live event, what is looked at. And I think it's very, very fair. When we get done, we have a great slate of shows. So make sure you get over to podcastawards.com. Check out all of the contestants, because what's going to happen is on October 23rd, we're going to open up voting. Excuse me, and feel free to go over there every day and vote for your favorite shows. The voting period is about engagement. Okay, we want the podcasters that have engaged audiences to, basically engage and to vote for their shows. And a lot of people don't like it that we do allow people to vote every day. But this meeting really is, again, it's about engagement. And generally, the largest shows just don't win. It doesn't cross that way. You would think, oh, that show's a slam dunk to win. And it turns out that their audience is maybe half the size, but because the audience is so engaged, they end up winning. The category that they may be in, and show the fan dedication. And that's what it's all about, is to find out which shows are the best. They made it through all these hoops so far, and now we need to see which shows can connect with their listeners and really make it happen. So I'm excited to see what's going to happen over the 15 days of voting. And of course, we'll have another big live event where we announce some of the winners, and then we'll have a few weeks before we get the trophies in. And we'll actually do the award ceremony, and we'll have every podcaster that has won will get some time to, address his or her audience. And we'll also have a live video feed. It's going to be fun. It really is, on the actual award ceremony. So I'm looking forward to that. PodCamp Hawaii is coming up this coming Friday and Saturday. And when we get done with PodCamp on Saturday night, I head for the airport, fly out Saturday evening to go to the East Coast. So I'll be on the East Coast for 4 days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Then Friday, I fly out to Chicago, and then I drive to Michigan to hook up with my mom and spend a few days with her. Then Sunday, I fly back to Honolulu, and then I'm going to be here for a while, I think, unless something else crops up. But yes, we're going to take the show on the road here after two shows again. But lots of great feedback on how the show has sounded on the road now. I'm real pleased with my pack out, and it's gotten pretty refined. And every time I come back, I throw something else off the side. I don't need that wire. I don't need this. And my little travel kit has gotten real efficient, and I'm really happy with the way the show on the road works. Okay, what else have I got here? I think that's about it. Of course, let's take care of a little business, and we'll get into the content. Yes, this is a tech show. We're going to have a lot of great tech today. But really, who keeps the bills paid around here is GoDaddy.com. If you're looking for a domain name, looking for a dedicated server, virtual dedicated server, a shared hosting account, GoDaddy.com has what you need. You get over there and pick up a domain or pick up one of those other types of services. When you get to that checkout counter, use the code TODD, that's Todd. That'll save you 10% off on your order. Geek 5 will save you 15% on orders $20 or more. Todd 20 will save you 20% on 1 year shared hosting account. So you can't beat that one right there at all. So I get lots of emails from people saying, hey, thank you. Saved me a lot of money on GoDaddy products. It's definitely appreciated, and lots of positive commentary coming back on their products and services as well. And Annie McCaskey, I believe, is going to be going solo on our next roundtable over at techpodcast.com. So if you're not out here with me at PodCamp Hawaii on Saturday the 25th, he's going to be holding a roundtable. And I think he's going to have someone on from Zune. Who else? Who else was he getting lined up? It was pretty. It's going to be a great show. And, of course, that event is sponsored by GoToMeeting. And more and more, flights are delayed during business trips. You can run late for meetings. You can get behind on work. And you can lose business just by being in the air all the time. So if you have to travel for business, that's great. But if you don't, there's a great product out there for you. GoToMeeting, the award-winning service that lets you hold meetings over the internet with people in multiple locations. Just log on to GoToMeeting.com and start meeting with a click. Instantly, everyone sees your computer desk on their computer screen. It's like meeting in person, but less expensive, less time-consuming. Meet from your office, home, hotel room, anytime, anywhere. Plus, you can hold as many meetings as you want for one flat rate. Try GoToMeeting for free for 30 days. Just visit GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. That's GoToMeeting.com/tech podcast. Do more and travel less with GoToMeeting. Thanks, GoToMeeting, for being a continued sponsor here and, of course, over at the Tech Podcast Roundtable as well. All right, what have I got on the agenda for you guys tonight? Let me look here. And, kind of a one word of, it's just every time I do the podcast awards, I know that I'm going to get some grief from some some podcasters, and it's just no exception. Every year, I get blasted, and I guess people think there's some agenda, and there really isn't. You know, every dime that I earn, or actually not earn, every dime that we bring in, and for sponsorship money, it's either used to pay for this person that does the webmastering. It is the webmaster behind it, the servers, the accounting firm that does all the validation of the data, pays for the prizes. And, really, people ask me all the time, Todd, how come you don't add more categories? Well, more categories cost more money, and it requires me to have a bigger and bigger pool of money I have to raise every year to make sure that all the podcasters that win get trophies and some prizes. And it's been tough. It really has. But this year, when we opened up the sponsorship to podcasters and allowed podcasters to come in and donate and contribute for a little ad space on the website, it's really made this year a lot less stressful for me because, in previous years, I had to promise to sponsor this or promise to sponsor that. And if they weren't happy with something, they were complaining. I basically want sponsors that are willing to give back to the community and, not be so demanding because it's an event that, again, it's nonprofit for us and it's something that's time consuming. And I had really thought hard, very, very hard about even running the podcast awards this year. I thought about, maybe I'll stop doing it because I looked at the cost of having the award ceremony in Vegas and it was huge dollars, huge, huge, huge amounts of money. With the unions and the rules and how many people we would have had and how long. So this year we're just taking it virtual. Doesn't cost me anything to do the award ceremony, but a little time, some electricity from lights, and a web connection. And I think we're going to have a much better event. People from all over the world will be able to attend. I think it'll be great. I think it will. But it is what it is. And hopefully that we've done our part to help recognize podcasters out there. They're doing a great job with their shows that maybe not known mainstream, but gives them a great opportunity to get some exposure. The from the time that the slate was put up in 2007 to the time the slate was taken down in 2008, just before we started this latest go-around, I think there was 1.3 million outbound clicks to those 220 shows last year. So the value those podcasters get, they're seeing it today. Huge, huge, huge number of outclicks as people are checking out people's shows. So the value of being a nominee is very, very large. And some of the shows have really realized that. And that's, you know, they attribute a lot of their growth that they have every year to getting their shows nominated. So anyway, I've went on about this too long. And let me get into the tech as I should. Hey, some great articles up tonight. And the first thing that caught my eye, and those are for those, this one is for those of you that have a DirecTV dish. Five things DirecTV does not want you to know. Oh, sounds very interesting, right? Well, we'll start at the top. Number five, protection plan. When DirecTV equipment breaks down, you have to pay about $80 for a service call unless you shell out $5.99 a month for the protection plan. Or you could wait till you have a problem and call and have the service added for $5.99, wait a couple of days, and then call them and say you've got an issue. There's no time limit on basically from the time you engage the service to when it's made available for you for repair. So you want to save $5.99, that might be a way. Or if you're looking to have a repair done, add that service. Upgrades. If you fulfilled your contract with DirecTV, call them every 6 months and ask for a free upgrade. You can get additional rooms, new equipment, HD receivers, and DVR receivers. Retention. Retention is a magical customer service department. They can get almost anything done. The key is when you're talking to the folks in the retention department is pretend that you're going to cancel your account. And then you might see some deals on your bill where you get some discounts or you get some new stuff thrown in. Phone lines. DirecTV receivers cannot send pay-per-view billing information back to DirecTV unless the receiver is connected to a phone line. That means if you disconnect your receiver from the phone line and order pay-per-view with the remote, you will not be billed. Some receivers have safeguards to prevent this. Now, I don't think people should steal service, and I don't imagine, I can't even understand how this would even work, to be honest with you. I thought you had to, the phone line had to send the information or had to basically authorize it. I don't fully get that, but the final thing here is receivers are untraceable. So as long as you disconnect your receiver from a phone line, DirecTV has no idea where that receiver is geographically. That means one receiver could be at your house, one at grandma's down the road, one at your best friend's house, and one in your RV. You could all you have to do is go out on eBay and pick up some extra DirecTV dishes and some coax cable. So this is from 5bestlist.com. So some good ideas on how to save money and, you know, maybe get a little more out of your service. Over on techradar.com, 40 brilliant Gmail hints, hacks, and secrets. Essential tips to turn your Gmail account into basically make yourself a power user. As reading through these, and I'm not even going to try to go through all 40, but I was like, wow, that's cool. Wow, I didn't know that. Whoa, that's cool. So if you're a heavy Gmail user like I am, and the thing is, I use Gmail within Outlook. I just use it as an email service. Now, I know many of you probably use Gmail just as a web mail only, and you don't use it with any other applications. But there's some pretty good ones here if you're a web-based user. So I have this linked up in the show notes for you. Bad news out of Yahoo, and I think we all saw this coming with the continued depression of their stock. They are prepared to lay off as many as 3,000 people. And this could come sometime this week when they do their earnings call. So, boy, oh, boy, lots of people in Silicon Valley are going to be looking for work and probably other parts of the country where Yahoo has people stationed at, I guess. But, you know, here's the thing that's crazy is that Yahoo's stock closed at $12.90 on Friday, and it was down as low as $11.37. So this means that Yahoo's market cap has dropped to about $18 billion. And just think, Microsoft was going to pay, what, 43? Nuts. Or they actually were going to pay $47 billion to to snap up the entire company. And right now, 17.88. If I was Microsoft, what a fire sale. What a fire sale price. Totally amazing. Okay, astronomy picture of the day for 20 October 2008 is moon rings and unexpected colors on Saturn. Pretty cool picture here. This is, I'm just amazed at some of the pictures that we are able to get from some of the spacecraft that are out there. And the Hubble, of course, the Hubble is still in trouble. We'll talk about that a little later in the show. But this is from the Cassini spacecraft that is currently orbiting Saturn. It beamed back these images showing the northern hemisphere of our solar system's most particular, spectacular ringed planet. And they say that colors have changed noticeably since Cassini arrived in 2004. And no one really knows why these colors are changing on Saturn. But just goes to show you that we live in a very mysterious galaxy. And this picture just depicts a lot of cool. You just wait to look at this picture. It doesn't really look like anything that Saturn has looked like in the past. So I think you'll get an idea when you check this out. Of course, the link will be up in the show notes. Hey, if you've got comments on today's show, you can call the voicemail hotline at 619-342-7365. Geeknews@gmail.com is a way to get a hold of me on the show. And, of course, I want to encourage you to send email and voicemails to the show and let us know what you think. And if you've got something to get off your chest, please do that as well. Or if you got something cool to report, do it via the voicemail hotline. I always love to hear from you guys. Okay, advertising age. Woe to Web 2.0 startups. Too few ads to go around. And, boy, the doom and gloom just continues. And a lot of these Web 2.0 startups are essentially shaking in their boots. A lot of them are continuing to laying people off, but there's an expectation that the ad market's going to probably shrink by about 50% in the next year as the dollars that are for advertising dries up. Now, what's interesting about this is this is mostly banner ads and inline advertising, you know, lots of stuff you guys see that drives you crazy when you're surfing websites. That kind of advertising is going to slowly diminish over the next few months. And I think we'll start to see a big impact probably quarter one of 2009. And the reason for that is because probably most of the companies had their, you know, the spends already locked in before a lot of this real bad stuff happened here in October. So I think we're going to start seeing an impact in quarter one 2009, and that's probably when the big fallout is going to start to happen. Of course, companies can always start, you know, canceling advertising buys at any time. But interesting article on this in Advertising Age at adage.com. Over the next 12 years or so, as we get ready to go back to the moon, you know, NASA's got a lot of hurdles to overcome. They've got a lot of technology they got to put in place. You know, and there's this dream that at some point in the future we'll have a lunar base where we'll actually have people on the moon just like we do at the International Space Station. Now, I've always thought that, you know, having a lunar base on the moon is really, you know, probably way out there just because of the cost involved. Not only that, just the logistics to make it happen. You know, you think building the space station, International Space Station in space is hard. You know, just think about actually, you know, putting, you know, not just building it in space where it's all docked together, but actually taking it to the moon and have to move stuff around and get it interconnected and dealing with dirt and dealing with, you know, all the things that the moon is going to throw at them. Well, it's cool. You know, the question has to be is how are they going to build or put enough gear up there, you know, in a short time and get it all interconnected where really it can be a productive place for people to do, for astronauts to do science and safe enough as well. You know, we're going to go to Mars at some point, so I guess moon is probably going to be our practice field. But they're saying now that astronauts could mix a do-it-yourself type of concrete for cheap at a moon base. And they've been able to come up with some ways in which they would actually make a concrete type of material on the moon in a vacuum in order to, you know, build structures that they're saying is going to be very, very, very strong. And I was amazed by what they have come up with here. They say that this using a process where they would mix, what they're going to do is you're obviously not going to take water up there, but they would mix sulfur with moon dust, and they get sulfur from ingredients that are on the moon already, heat that to a semi-liquid, and then they would bind it together somewhere around 130 to 140 degrees centigrade level. And once cooled, they say this concrete would be as hard as a rock, and they say it within a few hours you get ultimate strength concrete. Can you imagine the forms that they the technology that would have to go into? First of all, not only doing that, but actually the forms and everything that would be required. Because when you pour concrete, you just don't pour it. You have to have it all, you know, nice little form set up. And if you're going to pour into that, so it makes a wall, then being able to get it to seal. And I think it's, first of all, I think it's way out there on the edge for sure. But they think they can do it. And considering it costs $50,000 to $100,000, that's what it would cost to take 1 kilogram of material to the moon. Whatever they can make there probably would be advisable at those kinds of prices. Do you want to sponsor a kilogram of material going to the moon at $50,000? I don't think I would. Not at all. So anyway, they think they can pour concrete on the moon. We will see. You know, I think really it would be just smarter to send a bunch of vehicles that they build on Earth and put them up there and somehow get them interconnected. I think that's, you know, that's more realistic. But other than that, they're going to have to go underground, you know, find a place where there's a way to go underground. And, you know, that would be the quickest way to be able to build something, especially if they found a cavern or something they could get into. Then all they really have to worry about is making an entrance wall and making sure the cavern's airtight and, you know, put it, pressurize it and see if it'll work. That'd be the way to go, I think. The cheapest way, I would think. This next article really really blew me away, and it's about typhoons and probably applies to hurricanes as well. Having lived in Guam for a number of years and having suffered through some very devastating typhoons where I think we had some Cat 5s where 220, 230 miles per hour was the wind speeds. A lot of damage gets done, and at the same time, a lot of rain comes, and you have basically mass flooding, and vegetation gets ripped up, and really around the islands after a typhoon comes through, the waters are not clean for days just because so much sediment is drug out. Well, New Scientist Environment is reporting that in just a few days, a single typhoon can dump the same amount of carbon to the bottom of the ocean as an entire year's worth of rain. It says the storms do this by ripping mud and decaying vegetation off the land and flushing it down rivers in huge floods and out to sea. Two studies have basically come to the same conclusions. And I was like, wow, you know, if a typhoon can do this in a day, and it's basically the equivalent of a year's worth of rain, and I don't know if it's in the entire world or within that region, it's amazing. It really is, if you think about it. The process, you know, is significant because several typhoons hit islands each year. And, you know, Philippines, Taiwan, Japan are large parts which are covered in forest and vegetation. And they're saying here that even though this carbon that is being sucked out, and really what happens is all this vegetation gets washed down into rivers and streams, gets pushed out into the ocean, and then settles to the bottom of the ocean, and basically it's kind of locked in there. The carbon's locked in. It says that the typhoons store away carbon at about 500 to 1,000 times more slowly than we emit it by burning fossil fuels. He says, while this process of typhoons doesn't offset the burning of fossil fuels, it does say that that the figures roughly equate to the amount of carbon released from volcanoes and the weathering of rocks every year. So it's kind of like a trade-off. You've got carbon being released by volcanoes. You got carbon being released by the weathering of rocks every year, so which is, you know, going into the carbon buildup of the atmosphere. And meanwhile, these typhoons are sucking all this vegetation out and dumping it into the ocean, locking it down in sediment, which someday, in many, many millenniums ahead, will probably turn out to be new oil deposits. You know, basically all that stuff gets compacted together, and there's more and more layers of soil that gets pushed on, and eventually all that gets pushed down deep, gets smashed together, and all that process goes on to create oil and coal and everything else that happens in that process. So obviously we're not going to be the benefactors of it, but the trade-off on carbon is pretty amazing by what these storms do. So it's kind of old Mother Nature scrubbing, into doing a scrub, pulling in all this vegetation and all this topsoil and depositing it in the ocean and locking it away and not being released. And so, you know, there's a trade-off here for these storms. So whenever you have a hurricane that strikes an area, you can always say, well, at least some of the, you know, the whatever vegetation was washed downstream, that particular carbon is being locked away. And, you know, that's one positive of what is generally something very, very damaging to people's lives and livelihood. So a pretty cool article by New Scientist Environment at environment.newscientist.com. Now moving on here, the next article is not real super techie either, but it's about weight loss. And not necessarily weight loss in humans, but weight loss that they have found in the guts of rats, or something affecting weight gain or weight loss in rats. And what they have done is they found that a single molecule in the intestinal wall activated by waste products from gut bacteria, now this is getting deep, plays a large role in controlling whether the host animals are lean or fat. So what they said is when they activated the molecule, this slowed the movement of food through the intestine, allowing the animal to absorb more nutrients and thus gain weight. Without this signal, the animals weigh less. So what they're saying is going to probably eventually happen is that they're going to come up with some sort of regimen that may apply to humans, where they give you a regimen of some sort of a medicine or some sort of a blocker that basically makes your system work a little faster, and thus absorbing less, thus not gaining as much weight. So kind of an interesting idea there. So that leads to all kinds of interesting questions that you could ask skinny people. You know, you could say, hey, no, let's not even go down that subject line, because we'll very, very quickly get gross on the show. But anyway, this molecule is basically what is the triggering mechanism to depend how fast the food is getting processed. And I guess quicker in and quicker out means less weight gain. So we'll see. We'll see what happens here. But it's actually, it could be very dangerous. You start messing with a human body like that, and the next thing you know, you're going to die from starvation because you've changed something molecular in your gut. And it won't work all right anymore. It just seems a little bit too high risk for me. But I'm sure at some point there'll be some sort of treatment out there that will involve, you know, at a molecular level, trying to get the body to do and not do things that it wants to do naturally. Now, those of you that are the productive types, actually, all of us have times when we're more productive than others. So if you think about your day, what is the time of day that you are the most productive or the most creative? Well, they did a study, and this here really makes me go, It says, and you would think that this would not be the case, but they're saying that people are their most creative late at night, with 10:04 p.m., the most likely time for a eureka moment, researchers has found. This is amazing. Because I work my best at night. Usually when things are quiet, the kids went to bed, TV's off, and I'm very, very productive. I have a highly productive streak between like about 8:30 and 11. I mean, I get a massive amount of work done, and that I can get a whole day's worth of work really done in 2.5 hours. My wife is always amazed that I can crank stuff out as quick as I do in the evenings when she's just like, blah, I'm done. But it says that taking a shower is the most popular way of getting our creative juices flowing, with 44% of us heading beneath the nozzle when in need of mental breakthroughs. It also says, with a poll of 1,426 people, they say staying up late, burning a midnight oil and seeking inspiration is a norm. And they also said that they showed that 58% of people forget their best ideas by failing to write them down immediately, although women are more successful at keeping notes of things that come to them. They're like, wow, a wow moment. But the second, or actually the least creative time in the day, and I think we all can probably agree to this, is 4:33 in the afternoon. Let's see here. Let me look at the watch. 27 minutes to quitting time. You're engaged in get home. Get home itis. You're not engaged in being super productive. So it says that 92% of people admit to feeling uninspired in the afternoon. And really in the morning, I save mornings for like drudgery work. That's when I just kind of do the stuff I have to, have to drive through. And then the afternoon is more easy stuff. And then, but again, I agree. I'm right there with this survey and finding out that 10:04 p.m. is the most productive time for most people. So what do you guys think about that? Love to hear your feedback. When do you feel your most productive eureka moment happens to you? Is it 10:04 p.m.? Are you a morning person? So great article. I'll let you guys look it up when you look in the show notes tonight. Hey, the BBC, and of course the folks in the UK, and this, you know, this surprises me. The UK has been very aggressive this year in releasing information on unidentified flying objects, UFOs. And I know there's a lot of new listeners to this show. I had to tell my UFO story, but I'm not going to do it tonight. But in one of the things that they found in the release material, it said an airliner had a near miss with a UFO. A passenger jet bound for Heathrow Airport had a near miss with a UFO. Its Ministry of Defense files reveal. The captain of the airliner shouted a lookout to his co-pilot at the sight of a brown missile-shaped object shooting past them overhead. This happened, back in 1991. And the unsolved close encounter features in the UFO-related mystery documents made available by the National Archives. So it just goes to show, I mean, the UFO folks that live and die for this type of material are ecstatic because basically the government of the United Kingdom has said, yeah, there's a lot of stuff we can't explain out there. And, they're even going, So what does that say? You know, they're not saying that there is something, but they're saying we can't explain it. There's nothing to explain. We just don't understand it, especially after they do all their due diligence and try to find out if it was a missile or if it was another aircraft or anything like that. But there's about 200 files that are going to be made available over the next 4 years. And the current batch includes a U.S. Air Force pilot account of being ordered to shoot down a UFO back in the 50s. There's all kinds of stuff too. Lots of weird stuff here, and makes you go, "Wow, this is good." So, those of you that are UFO fans, I'm sure you've been on top of this all day today. But I wonder if the United States has got a pile of these documents somewhere that they're hanging on to. It's nice to see the UK government opening up and releasing this stuff. Are they trying to prepare us for something? That's probably the question we ought to be thinking about. All right, Green Tech Media over at greenlight.greentechmedia.com is talking about a new peak power time that is starting to affect the utility companies throughout the United States. It says because of big TV screens and home computers, utility companies are seeing another peak power problem evolve. It says traditional peak power hours are between 4 and 7 p.m. That's when we all get home. We're cooking dinner, putting kids in the bathtub. Our hot water heaters are running. And really, this is when we're consuming the most power. But right now, there says from 8 to 9 p.m. now, there's a new peak. You know, the kids are in bed and, people are firing up their computers, they're turning on their TVs, and they're saying it's reasonably close that this peak power period is now 4 to 7. So this is a new challenge because what happens is the utilities are smart. The utilities on the East Coast, when they're in peak power, start pulling power from the grid from other areas. and then vice versa. It switches as the days get longer. But it is very curious to see that we're starting now to cause utilities problem by having a new peak power time. All right, I got a small confession to make. While I was doing that last article, I was looking out my sliding glass door and I saw a big cockroach. Now, Hawaii has big cockroaches. They fly, and I see him fly in, and he come in and he landed over on by the sliding glass door. I'm like, oh no, he can't. That's even though it was outside, I gotta go get him. That's like the enemy, you know. So I had to stopped recording for about 2 minutes while I went out there and took care of business. I know I just grossed you guys out, but that's the power of podcasting. You can pause anytime the need is there. All right, let's go ahead and move into the next article. Comcast to double speeds, offer faster connections. So even though they've got their their bandwidth limitations in. I'm insanely jealous here. If you're looking for some performance, those of you that are on a 6x1 MPS will now get 12x2. In other words, 12 down, 2 up for $42.95 a month. If you have 8x2 now, then you're going to move to 16 down by 2 up for $52.95. Those of you that want the Ultra, you're on a 22.5. Now you're going to go to 30x5. And those of you that are on the Extreme 50, you're going to get 50 down, 10 up for $139 a month. Oh, I would just about die and go to heaven if I could get the Extreme 50, 50 down, 10 up. That would solve so many issues that I'm having here and pushing video and pushing media online live. But anyway, it's being rolled out. You're going to be able to, you have to pay a little more for a DOCSIS 3.0 modem. And boy, oh boy, any of you that are on this, let me know. Let me know what it feels like to have that kind of speed on a cable modem. How many of you use blog lines? I know that I had an account, haven't used it in years. So I've probably been using a Google Reader from time to time. But blog lines has had an extended outage, I guess, this weekend. It finally came back up online. And I hear they're looking for a buyer. I guess they're having a hard time monetizing the site. So it's really kind of gotten the backdoor treatment by the company that owns it. So anyway, those of you that are on blog lines, if you've had troubles, apparently they've got it fixed. And hopefully it'll stay up for a while. Moving on here to the next article, the folks over at TechCrunch are reporting on a new service. It's in beta testing called Screen Toaster. And they've, I don't know if they're getting everyone can get an account or not. If it's an open or closed beta, it's not indicated here. But the demo video, which was created by the software, shows how easy it is to use. Basically, you launch the application within a web browser. You do the screen capture that you're going to screen capture. You save it, and it uploads it to a website, and it's made available. It's just that easy. So it's very interesting. We'll see what happens with this one as it comes out. I'm sure it'll be popular for a lot of people. The thing with the screen capture software, and again, I use Camtasia and some other products, is that I want to be able to have control of the file. I don't want it to go into somebody else's third-party site. So I think that'll be a limitation. If they don't allow you to save the flash locally, then I would think that would be a bit of an issue. If you're forced to use their website and have to send people over there to see a screencast, not exactly the type of display I want to, or the presentation I want to put forth. Over on spacetoday.net, glitches delay Hubble reactivation. Says that two problems encountered with switching Hubble Space Telescope over to a backup science computer is going to delay the telescope's return to service until next week at the earliest. NASA officials said this last week. The telescope engineers started the process of transferring operations to the Side B backup science data handling system, and initial reports indicated that the switchover was going well, but one of the Hubble instruments reported lower than normal voltages, followed by an interruption in communications between the science computer and the telescope's main computer, putting the telescope back into a protective state once again. So hopefully sometime this week, because I guess this happened on Friday, so I guess sometime this week they hope to have it back up online. We'll see. The MPAA has responded to the EFF And of course, the EFF had basically said that that the MPAA was living in the Stone Age and living in the past. So they fired back and they said, "Forgive us if we take offense when the EFF and other activist organizations that continually take the side of those who profit from widespread copyright infringement attack our industry," wrote MPAA Chief Technology Officer Jim Williams. According to a copy of the letter published by CNET, they said, "It's a desperate throwback to the Napster days of old when the EFF would pull out this tired and weathered playbook. It's not 2001 anymore. We've moved on, so should you." Well, really, it's basically about Real DVD and the control and basically the stupidity of the lawsuit that the MPAA has filed. So, you know, basically they are living in the old age. And, you know, give it up. Why are you worried about DVD ripping software? Just get over it by now. Really, it's so easy to do. Why are they? I just don't understand it. Do you? Do any of you understand what, you know, why they're worried about this? It's not like there's any other software out there. All right, over on news.digitaltrends.com, they say that Apple and SciStar have decided to go to mediation. So, this is going to really alter the case. They're not going to have to go to through a judge initially. It's just basically going to be arbitration where the two sides will meet, and we'll see what happens with this. And I'm sure the folks at SciStar has said, well, maybe we shouldn't go so public with this. Maybe we'll get out for less money if we, you know, don't force Apple into, you know, throwing their 100 lawyers at us and going into a prolonged trial. They probably just don't have the money for it. Over on Gizmodo, and this is probably the video of the day, and this is, I have to admit, totally wild. There's a new Mars Science Laboratory that is going to be sent to Mars. It's basically another rover. And they're going to... I guess the best way to describe this is you've got the rover coming into the Mars atmosphere in a shell like they normally come, so that you have the, you know, a protective layer so that the thing doesn't get burned up to a crisp on entry. And then it discards the bottom of the shell. Then the top of it is kind of like looks like a flying saucer, and a parachute comes out and slows it down. And then at a certain point, the rover and another device get ejected from the upper level shell. And it starts descending, and the unit above the rover are basically controlled by jets. So they get close to the ground, and this thing basically goes into kind of like a hover mode, and then it drops the rover via a sky crane. It drops it by a sky crane, puts it on the ground, cables release, and then this thing flies off and crashes someplace. Pretty cool. Pretty cool. I looked at it and I'm like, there's a lot of moving parts. If this works, what a delivery system. And if they can make this thing work, you know, basically what they'll be able to do is put the rover on the ground and it'll basically say, "Hey, I'm here. I'm ready to go to work." So very complicated, though, because you think about it. You know, puts it over a boulder or something. This thing is stuck on top of a boulder. It rolls over, or who knows what. But the video is pretty cool. So I'll let you guys see that. It's linked up via the show notes. Hey, imagine that you are the president of France and you open up your online bank account and find out that, hey, some of my money is missing. Well, it appears that a bunch of scammers apparently were skimming money from the online bank account of French President Nicolas Sarkozy, or however he pronounces his last name. I apologize if there's French listeners. I just destroyed this guy's last name. But they've been taking money out of his bank account. And the French have said, well, the government needs to figure out how to improve the security of banking system. Wouldn't you ask the bank, hey, don't you think you better get your system more secure? But they don't say how much money was misplaced, but I'm sure the bank will be restoring whatever money was lost in his account to it. Can you imagine the president of the United States suffering from identity theft? Boy, oh boy, I wouldn't want to be on the receiving end of that Secret Service kicking in the door surprise. Okay, over on Tech Dirt, Good article about why ISPs should not be copyright cops. They, I guess over the weekend, one of the ISPs was asked, or on their own, took down a website of one of their customers that had music on it, which turned out to be music that was being legally distributed by the copyright owner. And they shut him down and basically were demanding that the individual who had the website produce basically documents proving that the music was copyrighted to him. But here they were. They're just being they're being copyright cops and shutting this guy's website down. First of all, how many people have their websites with their ISP? It seems kind of a strange place to have it. But I know, I guess Time Warner here in Hawaii has those types of accounts. But just goes to show you it could happen anywhere. This has happened on, don't get me wrong, this is not just ISPs that have done this in the past. Big providers have shut down people's accounts too for copyright infringement as well. Hosting providers have. But yes, there's been a lot of headaches with Gmail outages, especially on the pro-level service. So they continue to suffer a few hiccups and outages today, had big problems last week. I guess today's outage has been primarily centrally located to the people in and around the New York, around the state of New York. So, but Google better get their act together. People are paying for a commercial service and it's down like that. They get a reputation of not being able to stay up. Companies are not going to switch to them or they're going to move away. Hey, over on Boston.com, I have just found the coolest set of images of the sun. And some of these I've seen before, but these are absolutely cool. They're breathtaking. I yelled at my kids to come in here and take a look at these, and we just spent, maybe 5-10 minutes looking at these things. Just amazing. Really, really was. So I'll have the, of course, link up in the show notes. These are really the images of the day. And if they don't inspire you, something's wrong with you. Okay? Really. I'm serious. Just amazing set of pictures. And the detail. Just the absolute details. It's stunning. Absolutely stunning pictures. And surface images, you name it. Just, we have no idea. When do you see these? They're awesome. They really, really are. Okay, that wraps up the regular content tonight. I do have a fairly long voicemail, and I have some email comments. So get right into those right away. Again, comments on the show tonight, 619-342-7365, geeknews@gmail.com. geeknews@gmail.com. So let me go ahead and fire off into this first audio comment, and then we will get into the email.
Hey, Todd, Brian here from NewYorkPost.Lobotomy.com.
Hey.
On Skype, I'm on someone's wireless connection. I hope it holds up. Show 14, that MSNBC article about the ISPs being pressured to be child porn cops.
Yeah.
They wanted the ISPs to use this application that scans all your files.
Yeah.
You mentioned that maybe you could encrypt your files. Well, the company that makes this application, Brilliant Digital, is claiming that the system can trick users into sending their files unencrypted.
Huh.
Brilliant Digital has apparently been in trouble in the past for secretly installing adware on top of other legit apps.
Not good.
And you didn't mention that the fellow behind all this, Andrew Cuomo, is the same guy who killed the Usenet groups all in the name of stopping child porn peddlers.
Isn't he a piece of work?
Mm-hmm. Even though 99.9999% of the 3.5 billion Usenet articles were legit content.
I agree.
You know this tactic of finding the most despicable, hideous crime and associating it with some civil right you want to pull the plug on? Where does it end?
It hasn't, has it?
I mean, what's next, terrorists use torrents. Didn't you know about the terrorist and torrents? Sorry, but net neutrality is promoting terrorism. We got to put an end to that. And new research suggests that it's pretty much only racists who break their bandwidth cap. Yeah, downloading all that hate material. You didn't know that? And that it's pretty much only sex offenders and Muslim extremists who are listening to those podcasts. At least that's what I read in the papers. You know, they make people so afraid to exercise their rights. They fear they'll be accused of being committing one of these horrific crimes or associated with one of these groups. Imagine, Todd, you're in the airport on one of your business trips. You're on your cell telling a client about some Usenet group where he can find the information he needs, and some old lady overhears you. Security, security, help. That man is a child abuser, pornographer. Help. He's one of those Usenet grouper people. Arrest him. Hey, guess which candidate wants to appoint Andrew Cuomo to head of the Securities and Exchange Commission? Yeah, you know, never mind. I'm not going to say it. Google it, I reckon, if you're really curious. But hey, thanks for keeping us informed.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for the call, and thanks for keeping me smiling here. Yeah, it's the whole Usenet thing was just what a piece of work that guy was. Man, he's done some very kooky things, and you know, made people scared. Really have made companies scared. So it won't be long before the email you send to a buddy that's got a picture of something that is maybe a little bit not safe for work. Gets intercepted, and then who knows what? Reported what to your boss, and you get fired, even though it wasn't done. And who knows? Where's it going to end? And that's why I've always said here about this, searching for, you think you may have got, matter of fact, you went to the doctor and he's diagnosed you with something, and you go home and you start searching on the internet the subject. You sign up for a news group or someplace where they're talking about it, and you put your information out there. And next thing you know, your insurance company cancels your coverage. I'm telling you, then it's the way things are working. It won't be too long, so be careful out there, folks. I don't want to be a conspiracy theorist, but boy, you just don't know, do you? But anyway, hey, thanks for the call, and hey, don't be shy. Call back again. Love to hear more commentary. Hey, got an email from Andrew, and this came in just as I finished the last show. He says, "Hey, Todd, I think you're about ready to qualify for a trip to space with all the miles you're logging. Well, tell me, I'm actually 91,000 miles this year. I'm 9,000 miles. I'll go over 100K on this next run to the East Coast. So, yes, it has been a big flight year for sure." He says, "But here are a few quick links, and I mentioned at a seminar that I'm doing in New York City at a big photo show. One is about John McCain's complaints to YouTube for taking down ads due to copyright violations. Second one is on Google phone initial reviews are in. And then the third one is the Photo Plus Expo 25 anniversary show in New York City. That's going to be happening Thursday, October 23rd. So I have, of course, he's going to be doing a seminar there, how to choose the right inkjet printer and papers, photoplusexpo.com. Thanks, Andrew, for that. I have the links up in the show notes. Got an email from Brad. It says, "Hey, Todd, I have experienced the problems you specified on GNC with your Office applications staying in your task list even though you close the application. Actually, this happens all the time for me as well. On my system, though, I know that it isn't spyware/malware. The root cause has to do with macros, specifically VBA automation. It could be a macro in a Word document or even a third-party program that uses Office Automation Visual Basic for applications. When these macros or programs run, they create objects on your system, etc., like a Word object or an Excel object, which runs an instance of WinWord or Excel in the background. These EXEs will only disappear from your task list when the application properly terminates the object. However, many macros and third-party applications do not bother to properly terminate objects, or sometimes the macro/application crashes and the object cannot terminate properly. The end result is that even though you have closed your visible Word, the application that has grabbed the object keeps it open. I know of ways to stop this except for to use a third-party program that is creating a problem, but usually I like this program and don't want to remove it, so I just put up with it. A similar related problem you may notice is that the Word will start complaining about wanting to save the normal .dot file and tells you it can't save it because the document is already in use. Different systems have the same problem. Might be the same problem you're experiencing as well. Hope this helps, Brad. And Brad, I think, you know, what I've watched is I've had nothing in the taskbar that's running Windows. I mean, a Word. Loaded Word. Done some work. Closed Word. And the WinWord.exe is still open. And it's, you know, even though it's not on the screen. So what I don't think it's a third-party program. But and I don't have any macros. But I kind of seen some of this stuff before. So I'll give you advice. Still haven't dug to the complete bottom of it. And it's on this machine I'm doing the show with tonight. Got an email from Giovanna. It says, hey, Todd, we just launched a third annual blogging scholarship offering student bloggers a chance to win a $10,000 scholarship. If you think your listeners would be interested in blogging in the blogging scholarship, I would greatly appreciate your help in letting them know about it. I am hoping your listeners will take advantage of the opportunity. The application and additional information are located at www.collegescholarships.org/our scholarships/blogging.htm. I'll put this link up in the show notes. If you have any questions at all, please don't hesitate to contact me by replying to this email or calling me. And I don't know if I should put his email out, I mean his telephone number out here, but I have the link up to the $10,000 scholarships for student bloggers. So this might be an opportunity for some of you that have kids getting ready to go to college or in the future that are blogging. $10,000. Hey, that's some money. That's some money, parents. Or those of you that are in that mode of operation right now, go out there and get it. Link will be up in the show notes. Got an email from Pete in Albuquerque. He said, in your first show back from your vacation, you asked us to tell us about your non-Apple software that we find essential on the Mac. The one that comes to mind for me is Journaler. At Journaler, JOURNLER.com. And yes, that is the way it's spelled. As the name implies, it is a journaling tool. However, I don't really use it as a journal. It has a capability to store files, PDF, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, HTML, JPEG, etc. This capability, along with tags and smart folders, make it the ideal tool for me to store all of my paperwork. When I pay my bills online, I prefer the receipt I print the receipt to a PDF and store it in Journaler. I store all of my bills, web receipts, tax returns, account statements, just about anything that I would have kept in a file drawer. It's really helped me go truly paperless. With the smart folders, I can have the same document filled in different folders. For example, a utility bill for a rental property could be filed under bills and taxes. There are some other programs like it, but I found it to be just right for me. There's an active user community on the website, and the developer is continuously upgrading. Check it out, Pete from Albuquerque. Hey, Pete, does that thing back up? Can you put that on a backup disk somewhere? So, you know, the thing I worry about, something like that, is you get that thing overloaded, and all of a sudden it says, I'm done. How does it store its files? Does it put the files in a folder, then just replicates them on the program, or how's that work? And main thing is, can you keep it backed up? Okay, the next email is from Keith. He says, Todd, the on-the-road studio sounds super. It sounds the same as your Hawaii setup. Going on, he says, Did you know at Disneyland in the Haunted House Ballroom at the West End, there's a pipe organ? I did see that pipe organ when we went through there. He goes on to say, that pipe organ was in the Walt Disney movie 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea. Here is the kicker. That organ originally belonged to my dad. In 1956, Walt Disney purchased it from his company, Babcock Engineering Company. It was a true air-blowing pipe organ, not an electric one. Glad you had a great time on your vacation, Keith. Keith, that is too cool. That is too cool, yes. And I did see it. I think I just glanced at it and saw it there. But how cool is that? You know, that's a nice probably story in itself to tell. Got an email from Jack, and this is a pretty long one. Says, Todd, I'm sorry I'm running about a week behind in my podcast, but I just listened to 416, and you are completely correct about the airplanes saving money with direct routing. I am a recent retired airline pilot and wanted to confirm your comments about the money saved and time frame it will take for the FAA to change over to the new system. On a minor note, I wanted to correct your comments on GPS navigation. All airliners, at least American Airline airplanes, are equipped. By the way, American Airline airplanes have the best first-class sleeper seats out of Honolulu. So, Jack, you know, kudos to American Airlines for that. Too bad I've got so many miles with United. I may have to switch next year. Anyway, at least American Airline airplanes are equipped with GPS and inertial reference units, and we call them IMUs. In the Navy. But anyway, these are laser ring gyros that are used by the navigation system to guide the aircraft on a second-by-second basis. The GPS units constantly update the IRU's position. That's where how systems like that are tied together. So if the GPS lose their signals, like on the North Pole routes, the IRUs can keep the aircraft on course until the GPS comes back online. For your information, these systems are so accurate, the FAA has approved some of those systems, like those on the Boeing 777, to fly instrument approaches to low visibility landings without any other navigational aids. I've done this well, and it works very well. That's very cool. The aircraft I flew on, they weren't that accurate. Matter of fact, I remember back in the day having to shoot a fix by looking out a port on the top and getting a star fix and updating the inertial. So, yeah, before the days of GPS, that's kind of how we did it. Going on here, he says, on another note, you wanted to know your listeners a bit better. I'm a longtime listener. I started listening to GNC just before you published your book and have enjoyed the geek news and energy you bring to the show. I am a retired airline pilot as of September. For the last 16 years, I was a Czech airman and instructor pilot. I finished my 30-year flying career on the Boeing 777. My interest in computers comes from my schooling. I have a degree in electrical engineering, computer logic design, but have never used it. I went right into the Air Force out of college, spent 6 years flying A-7s and T-39 Sabreliners out of Andrews Air Force Base. I built a MITS Altar 8080 from a bare motherboard, designed the power supply, built a video and keyboard interface. I have been in PCs ever since. Todd, keep up the great work. Love what you do and the energy you bring to your podcast. Speaking of what you do, just what do you do now that you're retired Navy? This show and a little consulting. That's what I do. And, you know, that was the goal before I retired, was to do this full time. Living here in Hawaii is very expensive. I had always hoped that my retirement check would make my house payment, and it doesn't. Living in Hawaii, it's just absolutely impossible. So the show does very well. We've done well financially with the show, but the consulting really is keeps me busy, keeps me bouncing around along with everything else that we're doing and building Raw Voice. So a lot of the travel is involved with that. So thanks for asking. And I'm doing what I'm doing to just doing what you're doing to survive. That's what the main thing, right? Got an email from Wayne. He says, Dear Todd, my name is Wayne. I'm an ordinary American that has extraordinary luck. And I don't know if he's a listener of the show, but Wayne goes into an email that talks about, I'm not going to go into this real deep here, but all I can say is he was 35 years old, and he's had just massive pain for years. He's had problems with his back, and he was scheduled to go in and have some surgery, and he was going to have, I guess, a TDR, a total disc replacement, in 2007. And just before the procedure, his insurance company called and denied coverage on the grounds that the procedure was experimental in nature. And he was essentially going to have to pay the $100,000 to pay for the surgery himself, just basically to get some relief from the pain. And this is something that I was familiar with, but he wants to make people aware of. And again, I don't know if he's a listener of the show or not, but he talks about, and he's got a link to basically getting medical treatment overseas. And I know this is, a lot of people are using this, and this may be a good info for those of you that may have a family member that doesn't have any medical insurance and is, needs some sort of very expensive surgery. A lot of people today are traveling to Thailand and other countries where the medical cost could be 75% more inexpensive. In other words, a $100,000 procedure in the United States may be $25,000 in Thailand, yet they have, you know, top-of-the-line facilities. They have great surgeons that have been trained in the United States largely. You know, basically medical travel. People travel somewhere to get medical procedures done. So he wanted to share this with me. And again, I don't know if he's a listener or not, but he's got some links here, basically his case studies and stuff. He's got some information to back up some of the stuff he's talking about. But if any of you are in a predicament where you are facing losing your medical coverage and your medical insurance because of layoffs, because of the economy, or if you've been denied coverage on something, this is something to look into. I'm very familiar with it because I know a lot of people that have actually went to Thailand and other. I know primarily Thailand. I don't know why, but I think they've got some of the nicer facilities. And basically, you go there and they're ready to take your dollars and give you, you know, high-quality health care. When I got hurt in 2004 in Bahrain, and when I was in the hospital in Bahrain, the health care was tremendous. They were absolutely top-notch. And actually, the health care I received in the hospital in Bahrain, in the Bahraini hospital, was better than the treatment I got back when I came back and actually went to Triple Armor Medical Center here in Hawaii. The care was better overseas than the care I got when I got home. So don't rule this out, okay? If you think that, oh, I'm going to go overseas someplace and have something done and it's going to, you know, there's a higher health risk, you may want to look at this and take a look at the information. Again, I can't vouch for any of this data, but he sent this to me. And Wayne, if you are a listener, I apologize. I just didn't know if you were or not. The way the email came in, but I was familiar with the topic, and I thought I would go ahead and share it. Got an email from Jim, and it's just an article that was on CNN about dogs' ears emitting radio sounds. That's all I'm going to say. I'm just going to go ahead and link to that. All right, folks. Hey, going to wrap up here. Hey, thanks for hanging out with me today, and I have a regular show for you on Friday. Should be a lot to report. It's going to be an exciting week. And as always, y'all take care. Geeknews@gmail.com, geeknews@gmail.com. Voicemail hotline, 619-342-7365. Call and let me know what you think about the show or any articles or anything that you want to share as well. And appreciate it. Everyone have a great week. Take care out there. And get ready for daylight savings time. We're only a couple weeks away from that switch. And, of course, we don't switch here in Hawaii. So it's going to be nice actually for me because you're all going to be a little bit closer, only 5 hours difference from the East Coast from where I'm at, so there's six right now. So anyway, until Friday, everyone take care, and aloha.